And now we continue our summer movie festival. This week, the ladies you can't live with and can't live without.
Right then, I should have walked out of that place. But I couldn't make myself do it. She had me licked, and she knew it.
John Garfield, after being seduced by the ice-cold Lana Turner in The Postman, always rings twice. If you haven't already guessed, today we dish about dangerous dames that will bend you around their little fingers, promise to run away with you, and then leave you holding the smoking gun, the femme fatale. As always, we want to hear from you. Which temptress would you murder for? Send us your nomination and a brief reason why. Our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org, and you can nominate your favorite on our blog at npr.org/blog of the nation. As always, we're joined by Murray Horowitz, director and COO of the American Film Institute Silver Theater and Cultural Center here in the Washington, D.C. area. With us here in Studio 3A, Murray, nice to have you back.
Nice to be back, especially for this one, Neil.
And what makes a femme fatale?
Well, it's an interesting question. It's certainly somebody who has power and is usually after more power of one kind or another. Money is often a big one, mm-hmm. Political power sometimes, and you know, even running a mob operation, and sexual power. But here we are sort of two middle-aged white guys talking about femme fatale, so this is a very dangerous topic for us.
Well, it is associated, not exclusively, but associated a lot with one particular style of film.
That's right. It really has to do with film noir. There are some proto femme fatale. I mean, you think back in the days of the theater and opera in the 19th century, there was Carmen, there was Tosca. But then in the 20s, there arises, right after World War I, there arises the vamp. And there is a huge number of film titles with the word vamp in the title. And this was Pola Negri and Theda Bara and Anna May Wong.
And then there is, of course, the classic Mae West.
Well, right. And this is sort of the transition. It has to do with, I think it's not coincidental that it happens around the time women get the vote, that the vamp comes up. Women have new freedom and I think new sexual freedom with it, or at least new imagery. Makeup comes into vogue in the 1920s and 30s. And then in the 30s, you get Marlene Dietrich and Mae West.
In the film, She Done Him Wrong, Cary Grant, as Captain Cummings says, he likes diamonds but considers them rather cold. Mae West is Lady Lou disagrees.
I'm sorry you think more of your diamonds than you do of your soul.
I'm sorry you think more of my soul than you do of my diamonds. Maybe I ain't got no soul.
Ah, yes, you have. But you keep it hidden under a mask. You'll wake up and find it sometime. Haven't you ever met a man that can make you happy?
Sure. Lots of times.
That's great. Actually, the line that I thought was coming, and maybe it's from, I think it's from She Done Him Wrong, is the matron says to her, goodness, what lovely diamonds, and she says,
goodness had nothing to do with it.
But that's it. There's a kind of new assertiveness, and it exists in opposition to if you take the vamps and the silent stars of the 20s, the Mary Pickfords and the Lillian Gish, the wholesome girl next door. So I guess I can tell you what a femme fatale is partly by telling you what she isn't.
And at some point in the film, she may not turn out to be that way because, well, it's Hollywood, but she is a bad girl.
She is a bad girl, and sometimes the bad girl gets good, and sometimes the person you think is good that's actually bad. And the film Femme Fatale, we had to say that three times fast, actually occupies this kind of middle ground. She's neither the virgin nor the whore. But that is great because it makes her not a two-dimensional character. And there's a big range of femme fatales. They can be deadly. They can be spies like the Bond girls. Mm-hmm. They can be criminals. But usually, as I say, it has to do with power and their ability to get it.
And we mentioned the film noir. Well, here's a clip from a great film written by Raymond Chandler, the champion of the film noir.
Indeed.
And the noir novel. This is Alan Ladd as Johnny Morrison, and Veronica Lake, God, her hair could act, as Joyce Harwood at part of The End of the Night.
Well, don't you even say goodnight?
It's goodbye. And it's tough to say goodbye.
Why is it? You've never seen me before tonight.
Every guy's seen you before, somewhere. The trick is to find you.
Oh my gosh. There it is. Yes, and you're right about her hair. I've always thought that the saxophonist Kenny G used Veronica Lake as his model in life, actually. But, and Veronica, this is a chance to introduce the idea Neil, of the inheritors of the femme fatale tradition. It's true that they were in noir a lot, and there's a reason for that. I mean, film noir, like the women existing as opposed to the girl next door, film noir exists in a kind of opposition to the apple pie, squeaky clean way that they tell us life is supposed to be. And the old rules don't apply. And if the old rules don't apply, then women are able to do different things. But there is a Veronica Lake look-alike in L.A. Confidential, a modern film, a more contemporary film. And there are a lot of inheritors of the femme fatale. And we'll talk about that. I'm sure the callers have a lot of suggestions.
Well, let's see if we can get to the phones. 800-989-8255. Nominate your favorite femme fatale. Say that three times fast, or send us an email, at npr.org. Let's go to Mike. And Mike is with us from La Grande in Oregon.
Hello. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
My favorite femme fatale is also in my favorite movie of all time. That's called Chinatown, directed by Roman Polanski, with John Huston, Jack Nicholson, and Faye Dunaway as Evelyn Mulray, the daughter of Noah Cross, played by John Huston, who's the head of L.A. Water and Power, as impossibly corrupt as any human being could ever be.
Right.
And it's incest with his daughter, and his daughter hires Jake Gittes, a detective played by
Jack Nicholson, right.
Yeah, and everybody remembers. We don't have a clip of Tay from that particular one, but I can do it. My daughter, my sister.
She's my sister. And you know what? It's a great suggestion, Mike. Even though a lot of the latter-day femme fatales in our day exist in period movies like Chinatown, which takes place in the 30s, they're much more contemporary. And the great critic Pauline Kael had the greatest description of Faye Dunaway in that role. She said, "There's something incredibly sexy about beauty just beginning to go to seed," and that's
right.
Who she is. She's a femme fatale, all right.
And the thing about it is, she absolutely makes him do something he swore he would never
right.
do, and
right.
go back down to Chinatown to try and save her. And when you try to help somebody out, you're actually hurting them. And he did it again. Incredible movie, and she was incredible.
It's Chinatown, Jake.
Thanks very much. And asking somebody to do what they're not prepared to do or wouldn't consider, well, the famous example, of course, is Double Indemnity. Barbara Stanwyck as Phyllis Dietrichson scolds Fred McMurray as Walter Neff, the insurance salesman, for making a pass at her.
There's a speed limit in this state, Mr. Neff. 45 miles an hour.
How fast was I going, officer?
I'd say around 90.
Suppose you get down off your motorcycle and give me a ticket.
Suppose I let you off with a warning this time.
Suppose it doesn't take.
Suppose I have to whack you over the knuckles.
Suppose I bust out crying and put my head in your shoulder.
Suppose you try putting it on my husband's shoulder.
Who knew Fred McMurray could act?
Fred McMurray, very underrated, and an underrated saxophone player, too. She, to me, is like the archetype. I mean, this is Billy Wilder's Double Indemnity from 1944, another Raymond Chandler screenplay, and she is, I think that's one of the real qualifications of a femme fatale, as you and Mike have suggested, somebody who will make you do, you'll do anything for this woman.
Let's go to Deirdre. Deirdre with us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hey, guys, I wanted to mention Linda Fiorentino from The Last Seduction.
Oh, yes, very good.
She is awesome and horrible and repulsive, and she makes women everywhere look so bad, and I love her, love her, love her.
Yet she is amazing in that picture.
Awesome. She's so great. That's probably her best performance ever. And she just found this guy. She saw he was a sucker. She knew he was a sucker. I think he even knew he was a sucker.
Well,
and she got him to do exactly what she wanted him to do.
Isn't that the essence of it, though?
That's
you can't help yourself.
You can't help yourself. It's so good, or the promise of it is so good, that you will even commit murder for this woman. And it's a film from 1994 and a very good example of a latter-day femme fatale.
Thanks very much for the call, Deirdre.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go now to Paul. Paul with us from Worthington, Ohio.
Hi, gentlemen. You spoke about a range of femme fatales. I have somebody who, you know, is not the quintessential, but certainly stands out in my mind, and that would be Diana Rigg of the Avengers.
A television show, but I guess there was a movie.
There was a movie. And...
Well, and I just think that, you know, here was a woman whose, you know, husband is supposedly missing in action. There's constant sexual tension with her, you know, the lead, John Steed, Patrick McNee. And, you know, and she's deadly. The show has no gore, no blood, no, you know, none of that kind of stuff. You know, it's very sophisticated, but there's underlying kind of, like, danger always going on, and I just think she qualifies somewhere in that.
Yeah, we try to avoid television shows for the purposes of these exercises, but there was a film made of the Avengers, and in that character, too, power is at play. I mean, I'm not slavishly addicted to my own idea of power being an operative word here, but there's this coiled power. I mean, she's clearly a dangerous woman.
Absolutely. Thank you, gentlemen.
And if we're going, thanks very much for the call, Paul, and if we're going to television shows, I guess we shouldn't fail to include Natasha Fatale.
That's Matt Boris, right? I mean, this is, for those of you uninitiated, this is Rocky and Bullwinkle. Rocky and his friends, and right, Natasha Fatale is a femme fatale.
I had forgotten her last name until our boss here reminded me of it earlier today. We're talking with Murray Horowitz of the AFI's Silver Theater and Cultural Center here in the Washington, D.C. area, our annual summer movie festival here at Talk of the Nation. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see, we get another caller in. This is Stephen. Stephen with us from Holland in Michigan.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My favorite femme fatale is Lady Kaede from Ron, which is Akira Kurosawa's epic remake of King Lear. And I see her as sort of one of the originals because it is a takeoff of a play from Shakespeare, but it's in Japanese cinema, and it kind of shows that femme fatales are a universal fact that didn't just stem from the 1920s. And she uses her sexuality and her control and anger to scare two young sons of the old king into betraying both her families and ultimately killing all of them, and then her own self is killed, all to get revenge on the old father for killing her parents when he took over her kingdom.
I think it's a great idea, Stephen, and even though I mentioned theater, I only went back as far as the 19th century. I mean, Shakespeare was great at femme fatale. Lady Macbeth was nothing if not a femme fatale.
And as you say, he didn't even speak French.
But in Akira Kurosawa's treatment of in Throne of Blood of Macbeth and Ron, as Stephen suggests, of King Lear, to me, they really are, they benefit from the movie tradition because they are the sexiest, you know, Lady Macbeth's who is she? She's not Cordelia's the good one. Whichever.
The other one.
One of the nasty daughters, one of the evil daughters. They're the sexiest I've ever seen on stage or screen.
Stephen, thanks for the suggestion.
Thank you.
And let's go to Mike. Mike calling us from East Hampton in Massachusetts.
Hi. On the lighter side, I'd have to say Elizabeth Hurley from Bedazzled.
the remake of Bedazzled, but yes.
Right. If Bedazzled looked like Elizabeth Hurley, there'd be a lot of guys going straight to hell.
It's true.
She's so likable, and she's got the power, and, you know, he just can't help following her.
Right. He's a lot sexier than Peter Cook is in the original. She's a lot of sexier.
Oh, absolutely.
And if she, thanks very much for the call, Mike. And if she, of course, plays the devil, then there's the devil in a blue dress.
Frank doesn't go around beating people up. He prefers to use a knife as his weapon.
And what do you prefer to use as your weapon?
Well, why don't you search me and find out?
Ooh. She's one of my favorite contemporary, I'd say, because this is a Carl Franklin film from, I don't know the date, but it's sometime
not
in the
that
last
long
10
ago,
years.
With Denzel Washington, yeah, of course. Yes.
With Denzel Washington. And it's one of my favorite femme fatale because of all of the, we talked about power. There's a political plot. She's the mistress of a mayoral candidate, a very powerful man in town, and she's a white woman. Denzel Washington, the African American, is the gumshoe assigned to find her. And so there are all kinds of racial and political and sexual tensions going on. And even though it is a period piece, I find it very contemporary in its resonance.
A couple of email nominations. This from Karen in Denver. Have to cast a vote for Dorothy Dandridge in Carmen Jones. Harry Belafonte never had a chance.
Yep.
And this from Leaf in Denver. Hands down, Jessica Rabbit. She had it all for my imagination. That's much more dangerous because it's only a cartoon fantasy. But she turned out to be a good girl.
She did. She
all
did
along.
Turn out to be good.
But yeah. Murray, what's your favorite?
Well, somebody mentioned The Lighter Side. I think it might have been Mike who just called. And mine is my favorite. And I've got to mention it this week, Neil, because this is a film that takes place, the finale takes place at the 1932 Los Angeles Olympics. And I should not make a call to action on public radio, but go out and rent this movie. It's called Million Dollar Legs. It is a comedy classic. It stars W.C. Fields and Ben Turpin and Jack Oakey. Jack Oakey's an aviator. He finds this mythical village where all the men are named George, all the women are named Betty. They're all superhuman in power, so he takes them to the 1932 Olympics. But there's a spy involved, and that's Lyda Roberti, who died all too young, and she is one of the funniest and sexiest femme fatales I've ever seen.
She plays Mata McCree.
Their spirit been low,
mm-hmm.
and their bones been broken.
Uh-huh.
They been sure not to win, so they been don't get money from that Bowman feller. They don't Ben?
Madam McCree, you're priceless. Priceless.
Oh, no. I got my prize.
Now tell me that isn't Natasha. Murray Horowitz, thanks very much.
Thank you, Neil.
Murray Horowitz is the director and COO of the American Film Institute Silver Theater and Cultural Center here in the Washington area. He joined us in Studio 3A. Oh, Marlena Dietrich from De Blauwe Engel. Tomorrow, Ira Flatow's here with Science Friday. We'll talk to you again on Monday. Have a great weekend, everybody. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan.
Never wondered. What am I?